Good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is State v. Shannon L. Baxter. Mr. Calkins, good morning to you. You may approach. And you may proceed.
Good morning. Your Honor, this morning we have two issues to present to the court. First, I believe there was an abuse of discretion by the trial court in not granting a continuance on sentencing. And all of these issues relate to the sentencing of Shannon Baxter. The second issue is we believe the court erred in its interpretation of LB 605 and statutes that subsequently came out of that, specifically Section 29.2204.02, which was the change that made probation mandatory unless there were certain findings made by the trial court. I just want to go touch briefly on the failure to grant the continuance. This was the record shows that it was on September 28th that Ms. Baxter was alleged to have committed a offense for which she ultimately pled to. Somewhat unusual in that a plea agreement was reached prior to district court arraignment, and on November 25th, 2015, the court arraigned the defendant and accepted the plea at that point. It was for the class 4 felony possession of controlled substance, and there was an additional class 3 misdemeanor. The defendant was ordered to participate in a pre-sentence investigation and obtain a substance abuse evaluation, and the sentencing was set for February 4th. On January 25th, the defendant had participated in the pre-sentence investigation but had not finally obtained her substance abuse evaluation. A request for a continuance was asked for, and it was not objected to by the state. Without any hearing, the court denied the motion for the continuance and said, no, we're going to sentence him on that date. That was the only continuance asked for throughout all of the proceedings by the defendant.
What was the reason for not getting a substance abuse evaluation sooner?
The, essentially, funds and transportation. She had not been able, this was a court-appointed case, I was a court-appointed, and she had a severe lack of funds, which we would have explained to the court had we even been granted a telephonic hearing, but we were granted no hearing on the issue. The court just summarily overruled the motion for continuance and said, you know, we're proceeding to sentencing February 4th.
When was the PSR completed?
Probably about the time that we asked for the continuance, I would assume. I don't know the exact date.
How could the PSI be completed without your client getting the substance abuse testing?
Well, I guess it was not completed to the extent that they had not made that part of it. And so I don't know. I don't get a notification when the PSIs are done. I don't know if the court had anything at that point, as I indicated, we just got an order the next day after filing the motion for continuance and indicated it was denied.
So did you ask for a hearing on that motion to continue? Was there a notice of hearing, or was it?
There was no notice of hearing. We assumed then the court would either let us know if they wanted to do a telephonic hearing or if we were going to schedule it for hearing. I had checked with the state, with the prosecutor on it, and they had indicated they had no objection. And in all honesty, I think both the prosecution and the defense thought that probably the continuance would be granted.
Is there a local court rule when those are set? If a motion is set without a notice of hearing, is it automatically countered for the next hearing date? Or
I'm not sure on the, well, typically it would be on that. Due to the fact that we were only, would have been about 9 days or 10 days before the sentencing, typically what we find is we get a call from the judge's bailiff indicating, you know, because of time constraints, we're going to do this telephonically, or we may need to do it in another county, wait venue. We expected some response, I guess.
So chronologically, there's a plea accepted on November 25th. Is this correct?
Correct.
And then on January 25th, 2 months later, you all sought a continued, I'm sorry, and at the time of the plea, the sentencing was set for February 4th.
Correct.
Okay. And then on January 25, you all asked for a continuance.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay. And if and the record may show that the PSI was completed on the 28th. So what was your prejudice in the or the abuse in not giving you the continuance?
We were asking for the additional time for the defendant to be able to, we were trying to make arrangements for her to get to a substance abuse evaluation. She had no vehicle, she had no, we were trying to make arrangements for her to get a substance abuse evaluation, perhaps in the home of the town, find someone who could come there and give her one. And
so you indicated that she fully cooperated in the preparation of the PSR, but it, does the record show that she missed some meetings?
I think initially she did miss something.
Thank you.
Counselor, did you have an actual appointment for her to go in, like the next day or within a week to go in to get this evaluation, or were you just hoping that she would get the evaluation?
We had contacted probation and asked them if there was some assistance they could give, if we could even if they knew of anyone that could even come to that community to provide one, and probation was checking on that, and then that was when we checked with the state, and they said no, they had no objection.
When did you check, ask probation for assistance?
Within probably a week before that, when she had contacted me and said, I don't have that done yet.
Okay. And is there a reason that that couldn't have been done much earlier?
I probably could have become involved earlier if my client would.
And if your client had kept her appointments with the probation officer for purposes of doing the investigation for the PSI, might there have been a voucher available for that substance abuse evaluation?
I think she missed the first one, but I think she had actually made the meeting substantially before that. But even with the voucher for that, with no vehicle and no local family, part of it was even transportation. In our area, you get told you're driving 50 miles to 75 miles.
So there was a voucher available for the substance abuse evaluation, is that what you're
typically
saying?
Typically on felonies, there always is, yes.
All right, so it wasn't the cost of that eval that was prohibiting your client from getting it?
It was more of a matter of urgency.
Without the eval, would your client a suitable candidate for probation?
I believe my client was a suitable candidate for probation either way, which would be part of what we would go into the next point. I can address that.
Whenever you're ready, I didn't mean
okay.
to.
Okay, no, that's fine. I guess that might answer the question a little better. This was it was my first sentencing under the statutes arising out of LB 605, and I think it was the court's at the same time. And I guess briefly, what was required is the new statute requires that under a Class 4 felony, the defendant be placed on probation unless the court sets out certain parameters that would give a reason why they should not be. And those are substantial and compelling reasons. It isn't just a reason, it indicates it must be a substantial and compelling reason. In this particular instance, there were two findings that the defendant had failed to complete previous probations. In that instance, the statute specifically provides that standing alone, that is not a reason to deny the defendant probation. And then
how many times had your client failed in probation?
It was all right around the same time on the same probations, but it was revoked in three separate cases. So from the record, it would have been three times approximately 11 years before that.
96, 98, 2002?
So yeah, I think somewhere right in, they were in Colorado, so I don't have all of the record is a little bit unclear on that, but there were probations that had gone on, and I think they were all in that time period, the late 1990s and early, and then it was revoked in 2002. We had a, after that time period, the other reason that the court relied on was that she had not led a law-abiding life. We just wanted to point out there were 11 years in between those where she had not had any contact with a couple of traffic offenses. Our position would be that the court did not set out, simply setting out conclusions does not set out substantial and compelling reasons.
Is that an error of law?
You know, I've looked at that, whether that's, I think that it's a question of, you know, is the failure to do that because of an error of law, or is it, does that lead to the abuse of discretion by the trial court by not following the statute? I think the court is required to set those out, not just say, for instance, it appreciates the seriousness of the offense, but to set up why it appreciates the seriousness.
The order in this case tracks the new language. You agree?
Tracks the new language. Right. Our position would be those are not, that just simply stating the language of the statute are not substantial and compelling reasons required by the statute and the intent of LD 605. Otherwise, all they have...
So you're not saying that the trial judge misperceived the law or misstated the law in this order?
No, I think there's more required that it substantial and compelling reasons, not the... Really what the court set out were conclusions, or the findings, and I think what the intent is that those, in order to differentiate between variance and prejudice, the court is required to set out what the basis of those findings are.
But didn't the court say more on the record than what it was actually put in the sentencing order? Didn't they talk about her scores on the LSCMI? Didn't he talk about her failures to... come to several appointments with the pre-sentence investigation people. Didn't he talk about those things on the record?
There were some more of those items mentioned, but they were, as the court went through all of that, they were, obviously the court did not find those to be part of what the substantial and compelling reasons were as set forth in the court's order.
Well, that's a distinction between a big point. Between what was discussed at the hearing and that which was written down in the order. There's a discrepancy, is there not?
There is a discrepancy.
Right. And is that where you're going with your argument that those items that are discussed at the sentencing hearing must be written into the order?
Well, what we're looking at is the idea that in order to if the defendant had said, I'm not going to cooperate, I don't want probation, just send me to prison. I think under those circumstances, the court can say, this is likely to recur again. And that's a whole different situation than a defendant who's going in saying, I want to be on probation. So I think the rationale behind coming to those conclusions is important as well. Otherwise, before the LB 605 and the statute, that's what we had. The court just said, we consider these factors, and here's what the sentence is.
With respect to potential for succeeding on probation, the PSR says, quotes the defendant as saying about being on probation, that won't affect my life. It didn't affect my life until I screwed up in the past. What does that suggest for future compliance with terms of probation?
Well, I think she understood where she was at, and she had gone quite some time without any issues, and obviously by asking, she felt she could complete probation. And I think what she was saying there was, it's not going to affect me because I can do this.
Thank you.
And didn't she have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old in this home, and it was not well kept and smelled of feces, and and children were actually removed from the home because of the paraphernalia and the residue scattered throughout the house. I mean, weren't those factors the court considered as well?
As far as substantial and compelling reasons, we don't know.
Well, they were in the pre-sentence investigation, weren't they?
They were actually part of it was part of the plea agreement.
But there was a juvenile case that she admitted.
There was a juvenile case that did continue on, which she is still participating in. Obviously, by telephone at this point, but she is still participating.
And that pre-sentence investigation was received into evidence for purposes of the sentencing, is that correct?
It was.
And so part of the record here, is that correct?
It's correct.
Thank you.
In terms of advising the appellate court what the trial court thought the substantial and compelling reasons were, does it make any difference if it's pronounced in open court or if it's included in the written order? In other words, doesn't the appellate court see it either way?
I think the court does see that. Obviously, the court has the record and sees what's on the record. Having been through a lot of sentencings, it just appeared to me that LV 605 and this statute requires more than what we had in the past. The statute says you shall place someone on probation unless you make specific findings. And the court didn't say, here are my compelling, these are the compelling and substantial.
Well, it doesn't say make specific findings, does it? It says there are substantial and compelling reasons, including but not limited to the criteria in subsections 2 and 3. And those criteria in subsections 2 and 3 are the same, essentially the same criteria that have been there all along, aren't they?
They are.
If the trial judge says, I find X, Y, Z out of 2 or 3, isn't that compliance with the statute the way it's worded?
I don't think it's... is it in compliance with the statute as it's worded? The court is making those findings. If they're saying those are substantial and compelling, the statute changed the whole way it was. Obviously, the legislature wanted the district courts to look at the felonies in a different manner, particularly these Class 4 felonies. And you go through the legislative intent and it's, the prison overcrowding, all the things that were talked about. If the court goes in and does exactly the same thing that we've always done, then I don't think we're getting to the intent that the legislature was asking out of the district courts.
But did they write that in the statute? In other words, I think maybe the statute says the shall I use the word loosely, presumption of probation, but and previous failures on probation or failure is not enough, right? Tell us you found substantial and compelling reasons.
Well, I guess my position and my feeling was that the substantial and compelling reasons were, since that was something new and additional that had been added, and it said, the court shall place someone on probation, that it took more than just saying, I'm finding substantial and compelling reasons, and therefore...
Right. Well, it is new, and that's why we're having this conversation.
I appreciate you allowing me to address some of the things and address the questions, because it was, as I indicated, it was my first sentencing under that of the courts as well.
Right, and there's part of the sentencing hearing is they're not with the court talking to, I can't tell who the scrivener, does this need to go in the order? So it's new territory.
To me, just reciting what comes out of the statute doesn't really allow this court or any other court to distinguish necessarily between different defendants. I mean, this was as you noted from the reg, this was a case of a residue found in the pipe. And to me, some of those type cases are different than something if you go into a home and find 2 or 3 ounces. I think the substantial and compelling reasons, there's a multitude of what I think the court needs to know and what the trial court needs to address And it was my feeling the trial court did not address it in this manner, and that it resulted in an abuse of discretion of the two-year sentence based on that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Duffy, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I am Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Appellant has assigned two errors on appeal, and I will begin with the assignment of error related to the sentence imposed. I will briefly highlight the relevant portions of the statute at issue, discuss the appropriate standard of review, and then move on to the district court's sentencing order in this case. Appellant was convicted of a Class 4 felony, and the crime was committed after the effective date of OB 605. As such, there was a statutory presumption that the appellant would be sentenced to probation. However, Chapter 29, Section 2204.02, Subsection 2, provides that the presumption of probation for a Class 4 felony can be overcome if an offender fits into one of three categories. Subsection 3 of that same section requires that if the sentencing court chooses to impose probation, it shall state its reason on the record. Applicable in this case is that the sentencing court can impose incarceration where there are substantial and compelling reasons present why an offender cannot be safely and effectively supervised in the community. The state believes this should still be reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard. While the changes made by LB 605 do require a court to state its reason on the record, once that portion of the statute has been complied with, this is the same as any other sentencing and should be reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard.
Well, to echo Justice Castle's previous question, for appellate purposes, if there are reasons stated on the record and that's more fulsome than the order, would that be satisfactory?
Your Honor, I believe that the state believes it would be. The statute does not require the court to make specific written findings. It just requires the court to state its reasons on the record. So as was pointed out, an appellate court would be able to review both the bill of exceptions and the written sentencing orders to get an idea of the sentencing court's reason.
Suppose the trial court doesn't say anything at the sentencing, but in the written order sets forth specific findings and reasons, is that sufficient?
Your Honor, I haven't fully considered that, but sort of off the cuff, I think the
Isn't
court...
the transcript part of our record?
It is, Your Honor, and so the sentencing order would be before the court on appellate review, so I think the court would be able to see the reason a sentencing court chose to withhold probation.
So whether the reason is in the bill of exceptions or in the transcript, the state believes that's sufficient?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Here, the district court did find there were substantial and compelling reasons why the appellant could not be safely and effectively supervised in the community. The district court's order noted that appellant had failed to comply with and had probation revoked three previous times. A lesser sentence would depreciate the seriousness of the crime. The risk was substantial that during a period of probation, the appellant would have engaged in additional criminal conduct, that appellant had not led a law-abiding life for a substantial period of her life, and that the circumstances of the crime were not the result of circumstances unlikely to recur.
What does substantial and compelling mean? And is that a new term?
Your Honor, the state does not believe so. It's common, ordinary usage, and the statute further provides some guidance by directing a sentencing court that a previous failure on probation is not, standing alone, a substantial and compelling reason.
And that's the case in this particular case.
I believe the district court cited more reasons than just the previous failure on probation. The statute does not prohibit it from being a reason. It just
and I know you've gone over them before, but what are those additional reasons?
That the district court chose to withhold.
Right.
Well, in the sentencing order, that appellant had failed on previous terms of probation, the lesser sentence would depreciate the seriousness of the crime. The risk was substantial that during a period of probation, the appellant would have engaged in additional
crime. And where did that evidence come from, the substantial risk?
In the pre-sentence investigation, first I would note that appellant did have those previous terms of probation revoked, and the state does acknowledge that she did have minimal law enforcement contact from 2005 to 2015, but this contact increased beginning in May of 2015. Appellant failed to participate in the pre-sentence investigation until just 3 weeks prior to sentencing. In the PSI, the probation officer noted that 3 previous appointments had been scheduled, and appellant did not attend any of them. When she did finally attend an appointment in January, she did not have the appropriate paperwork filled out, so the appointment was spent doing the intake paperwork rather than the actual pre-sentence investigation process. Appellant noted, when asked how a term of probation would affect her life, noted that it wouldn't affect my life, didn't affect my life until I screwed up. The pre-sentence investigation...
What is that? What did she mean when she said that?
Your Honor, I don't know. I'm unsure. I think when it reviewed in totality of the circumstances, when she's not keeping appointments with the probation office, the probation officer noted she appeared to be minimizing her use of controlled substances, appeared to be minimizing the effect that criminal activity has had on her life. I don't know for sure why she said it wouldn't affect her life, but when looking at it as a whole, it appears that appellant has not really shown that she desires to be placed on probation or that she could be effectively supervised in the community on probation.
So is that substantial and compelling?
Your Honor, I think that it can be. I think that if the offender cannot be effectively supervised in the community, then the risk is substantial that additional criminal conduct will occur. And I believe in 2260, of which the substantial compelling reasons directs the sentencing court to review, some of the reasons listed that would weigh in favor of incarceration are that the risk is substantial that during a period of probation the offender will engage in additional criminal
conduct.
And
did the pre-sentence investigation say that she was a high risk to reoffend?
On the LSCMI, appellant scored a 29 overall, putting her in the high risk to reoffend. She did have some scores that were in the high category. I believe actually her drug and alcohol was in the medium category, but overall she was rated a high risk to reoffend.
Is that substantial and compelling?
I think, yes, Your Honor, I believe that it can be. I think that it is in this case. The probation officer who reviewed the matter looked at appellant's behavior in the pre-sentence investigation process, and then the court looked at that and also reviewed the circumstances of the offense, the circumstances of appellant's life, and determined that there were substantial and compelling reasons why she could not be safely and effectively supervised in the community.
Do you think the statutory language that talks about the offender has not previously succeeded on probation is not standing alone a substantial and compelling reason? Does that speak only to a single instance of probation failure, multiple instances of probation failure, or is it ambiguous on that issue?
Your Honor, I have not fully considered that. I think it might be a little unclear whether a court could say you failed 2 previous times and that is a substantial and compelling reason. I think it is more likely the case, as it is here, that when there are multiple failures, previous failures on probation, there are going to be other substantial and compelling reasons present, such as substance abuse issues or that circumstances of the offense based on appellant's attitude would be more likely to recur during a period of probation.
So your answer is, practically speaking, it may not make any difference, but do you have a statutory interpretation answer?
I do not.
All right, thank you.
If those failures had occurred 11 years before this sentencing, and there was nothing else that the judge cited, is that substantial and compelling?
Well, Your Honor, if there were no other, in this case specifically, I think that the sentence may still be found on appeal to not be an abuse of discretion, even if the court had not specifically cited other instances, if an appellate court reviewed it and could see that there were other substantial and compelling reasons present to show that the sentencing court had not abused its discretion in imposing a sentence of incarceration rather than probation. Unless there are further questions on this issue, I will briefly address the assignment of error related to the motion to continue. The state just briefly would note that appellant did not suffer any prejudice as a result of this denial. The sentencing court was aware that appellant had issues with controlled substances. There was information in the pre-sentence investigation about this. And unless there are further questions on that, I will submit it on brief.
Does the Attorney General's office have some general philosophy about how district court judges are to handle cases when doing 605 sentencings?
I'm not totally clear just generally on if I may.
You may.
I'm not totally sure, Your Honor. I don't think that I am have considered that every single instance or scenario that could come out of 605 to a point where I would feel comfortable stating a blanket office position on that. I think here in this case, the sentencing court found there were substantial and compelling reasons, stated so on the record, and that is supported by evidence before the court. And so we do not believe in this case that the sentencing court abused its discretion.
What kind of guidance should we be giving the district court judges from this case?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that there is any further guidance necessary. I think that the statute is clear that probation shall be imposed unless an offender falls into one of three categories and that the court must state its reason on the record. And once those have been complied with, for substantial compelling reasons, the legislature has given guidance that a failure on probation previously is not a substantial and compelling reason, and it also directs that...
Standing alone, under the words of the statute.
Yes, thank you. I apologize. Standing alone is not a substantial and compelling reason, and it also directs the sentencing court to Chapter 29, Section 2260, which are factors that have long been used by sentencing courts when determining whether incarceration or probation is a more appropriate sentence for an offender.
What were the facts that supported the underlying conviction for this Class 4 felon?
The Class 4 felony, Your Honor, a search warrant was executed on September 28th, and there were three bedrooms in the home. In the first bedroom, officers located a propane torch, a broken light bulb, pipes, and water bombs used for narcotics. In the second bedroom, there was a black tin which contained paraphernalia, small baggies, a scale, smoking pipes, spoons. The lid of that tin had some white residue that tested positive for methamphetamine. In the third bedroom, there was a smoking pipe, a blue case which contained an empty ink pen, and several small baggies, and a burnt light bulb which tested positive for cocaine. So the methamphetamine on the tin box lid was the basis for the Class 4 felony.
Were there other adults living in the home?
I believe that appellant's son was living, or was in the home, an older...
Adult.
An adult, yes. I have not reviewed that portion in any detail in any length of time, but I do believe that there was another adult who was in the home. If there are no additional questions, we request this court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so we will go on to the next case of the day. Mr. Calkins, thank you for serving in this matter. Next case is State v. James D. Mars.